Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
Welcome back to the dialogue with Dewa De Boer on Reality Check Radio, where we discuss politics, power, and culture. You can text us your thoughts on 2057 or email your questions to inbox@realitycheck.radio. We are joined now by Steve Christou, a councillor from Cumberland City Council in Australia, to talk about local government in Australia and some small victories in the culture wars at the local level. So good afternoon and welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Darrell. Nice to be on with you. Thank you for the invite.
Could you give us a little bit more background on yourself, which side of the political aisle you're on, and also maybe give people in New Zealand here an idea of where your Cumberland City Council is located?
Sure. My name's Steve Christou. I'm a current councillor at Cumberland City Council. I was one of the first councillors elected to what's now known as a super council, a council made up of 250,000 people. And I'm a former mayor there as well. I originally started off my political career in the Australian Labor Party. I spent 17 years in that party, and then I left the Labor Party because it no longer agreed with my values. I felt they drifted too much to the left, too much they became environmental zealots and not focusing on the working class people and where the true origins are. At the moment, you could call me a right-wing conservative. I sit as an independent candidate.
And I believe Cumberland is in Western Sydney?
Yes, it is. It's Western Sydney, right next door to the second biggest city in New South Wales, and that's Parramatta. So we're based, Cumberland centrally is based in Merrylands and Granville, and that's literally a 5-minute drive from Parramatta.
Now, you've been in the news recently for the work that your council has done to push back against the leftist LGBTQ agenda in public libraries by banning some books promoting same-sex parenting. Could you give us a little bit of a background on that controversy as well?
Yeah, absolutely, I will. Just so you get a better clarity and understanding, the whole saga started with the Labor Party refusing to ban drag story reading time at council. Once a year, local governments, councils have their annual conference in New South Wales, and it's roughly made up of 150 councils. They all get together and one would think they would discuss important issues, cost of living crisis, improvements to their constituencies, how they're actually going to help their people, upgrades to roads, libraries, public spaces, parks. But no, all we get at local government conference is gender neutral toilets. Let's support drag story reading time and pay these performers to read to our children and other left-wing woke initiatives. So that's how the whole issue started when they supported, local government conference supported, having drag story reading time in local councils. And I went back to my council and said, we're not going to cop this. So I brought a motion forward that we not support drag story reading time. And on the first vote, it got defeated by the Labor Party. It was 7-all and it went to a casting vote of the mayor. And she voted to allow drag story reading time to happen. The next week, we drummed up the community and we had 400 protesters come out and they told the Labor Party councillors in no uncertain terms that we're not going to cop this. So that was the first merry-go-round with these kind of initiatives. And then we had the same parenting book, which was found in the library and not for the first time. And that's how we had the whole fiasco and the whole saga that we did. It was basically in the 2-year-old section of the library. Local residents had found that and complained to me and initially sent me a text message saying, get this crap off our shelves. And that's how it came to light.
Yeah, it's fascinating how, like at local government level, that they're targeting these particular woke social issues, basically sexualization of children, that they're trying to push that through local councils, through libraries, and targeting, like you said, kids as young as, basically trying to get it read to 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds. And how did you manage to then get the ban on this passed, whereas previously you didn't have the numbers for at least the drag reading or drag story reading?
Well, I had noticed there were a couple of councillors away at one particular meeting when this happened. And, you know, I'm not afraid of a fight. And I took it up because we believe in our core family and religious values. And when 85% of our community are telling us they don't want their children asking questions as young as two over same-sex parents, it's not discriminating against the same-sex parents. It's that it shouldn't be in the two-year-old section of the library. Let kids be kids. So we got it up. But then it became a massive issue with the gay pride community, and there was a campaign drummed up. And unfortunately, the next week, there were 600 protesters come out to meet the gay protesters, and roughly 100 protesters wanting the book put back on the shelf. And unfortunately, the majority of my colleagues, they caved in, and they gave in to the outsiders because they weren't from our community, the majority of them. 600 people that showed up to protest were from our community saying, we don't want this book on the shelves, keep it off the shelves. And they gave in to the 100 or so protesters that wanted the book off the shelf, back on the shelf. And I can honestly tell you, 60 of those 100 would have been from out of the area, those inner west suburbs of Ashfield, Newtown, Marrickville and Erskineville. They're the ones that support these kind of initiatives.
And I was looking at the original vote. Apparently you had a Labour councillor who defected as well to back you on this, Muhammad Hussain. Was this, in the end, did they not really hold the line? It was, as you mentioned, everybody, basically everyone except for you backed down, including the Labour councillor who backed you at the earlier stage.
Well, that's correct. Councillor Hussain actually voted with us the first time. And he was going to vote, my understanding was he was going to vote with us the second time as well. We had a meeting with Councillor Hussain, and his people had requested a meeting with us, and we sat down with his supporters, and I believe Councillor Hussain had three Islamic sheikhs and high religious leaders come out from his own community and background. So, and it was very disappointing when he, at the last second, caved in and supported the book being put back on the shelf, but that's a question for Councillor Hussain to answer. I stood firm and I represented my community proudly, and I always will.
And on the whole, is the area that your council represents quite a socially conservative one? Religious, family values and so on, you're representing the majority of your people.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you a bit of background so your listeners understand about our area. Roughly 60% of the population were born overseas. They weren't born in Australia. They come from a wide variety of diverse backgrounds, very, very family orientated, very religious orientated, not just in Christianity. We have a whole bunch of religions, Islamic, Hindu, Buddhist, and Orthodox, Catholics, Maronites, the whole lot. And they are telling us, we do not want these kind of books or these kind of issues on our public library shelves. We don't want drag queens reading to our children. We don't want same-sex parenting books in the two-year-old section of the library. It's not being discriminatory. It's just saying we don't want this at our children, targeted at our children. That can happen later on in life, you know, in the teenage years or when they're adults. Children can make their own minds up. But let kids be kids. Let them go into a library, enjoy a book, play with their friends, because a lot of children have meetups at the library and parents have meetups, and just let them be kids. They shouldn't be asking questions beyond their comprehension.
As I understand it, the New South Wales government actually threatened to pull funding from your local council. Do you think that had a bit of an effect on things as well? But essentially saying, oh, you need to re-vote on this until you get it right. Otherwise, we will try and bankrupt your council. Did they sort of financially blackmail councillors, do you think? Or was that not a big issue?
No, it was an issue. And I stood firm. I said, you know, at the time, I said, well, shame on them. Essentially, what you're doing is you are threatening one of the most socially and financially disadvantaged communities in New South Wales. And they like to dump a lot of immigration out in Western Sydney, and a lot of these people can't read. And now you're threatening to take away the very facilities that are going to assist these migrants and these immigrants learn how to read and bankrupt our libraries. And I had a lot of parents tell me, well, let them pull the funding. We'll fundraise and we'll make up the $750,000 ourselves for the year. And I agree with them. In a council that was sitting on a $4 million profit, sometimes you have to stand on your principles and not let state government sell us out or threaten us. What's next? You know, some councillors, in my opinion, caved in over a $750,000 grant. Where's the threshold next? $400,000? $300,000? Where do we set out our values? Because I know there's some councillors that voted to put the book back on the shelf that deep down did not want the book to go back on the shelf, but they felt very pressured to do so.
And you have mentioned as well high levels of immigration in Western Sydney, and I believe you've voiced your opposition to the Labor Party policy of what's effectively an open borders policy. How is that negatively impacting your area as well?
Well, look, not just in my area, but it's creating a housing shortage and a rental shortage. And now we have housing affordability. You know, our young people today, or mums and dads, is becoming virtually impossible to own your own home. The average house now is roughly $1.5 million. And that's for a rundown house. You're not getting anything special for $1.5 million. And when the average rent in Sydney is $1,000 for a three-bedroom or four-bedroom house. And when you factor in that the average wage is $1,200 after tax, if you're just working a normal job like most people do, there's not much money left over for groceries, electricity bills, petrol, insurance premiums and whatnot. And everything is sky high. Everything has skyrocketed in Australia. Electricity is through the roof. Insurance premiums are through the roof. Petrol are through the roof. 2 years ago, when the Labor government came to power at a federal level, they ran on a platform that no person or family would be worse off under their watch, and everything was too expensive. Petrol was too expensive. Cost of living was too expensive. Well, in 2 years, nothing has gone down under this current Labor government. Everything has gone up. And they're the issues that are facing Western Sydney, along with excess immigration, and we've had the stuff up with illegal immigrants being released by the High Court. They lost a court case there, and you had immigrants that were held in detention centres, in some cases violent immigrants, rapists, killers and child molesters released into the public, and they weren't properly monitored.
That's shocking, and unfortunately New Zealanders will be able to sympathise with you and on basically everything that you said. These are the same issues that are facing New Zealanders in the last few years especially. We did have a Labor government that's now gone, but we know exactly what you're experiencing and how bad it is, everything from cost of living to crime. It's all gotten out of control. You also had a referendum recently, I guess around the time of your federal election, or at the same time, called the Voice, or a referendum on the Voice to an Australian Parliament. Could you explain a little bit about this referendum and what happened with it?
Again, the brainchild of the Australian Labor Party and the Australian Greens Party, they were pushing very heavily for a voice to Parliament for Indigenous people. It was basically to enshrine them in Australia's constitution. $450 million they wasted promoting this referendum, and they were telling anyone that disagreed with them that they're racist and bigots and we've got to enshrine this, and there's majority support for this, majority support. And this fallacy went on up until election day, and there was a lot of money in support of the Yes campaign. A lot of big businesses jumped on board, and, you know, the No campaign ran a grassroots basic campaign. And when October 14th came round, 60% of Australians said, no, we don't want an Indigenous voice to Parliament. We're all equal. We're not going to promote one race above another in this country. We want to be equal. We want everybody to stand shoulder to shoulder, hand in hand, side by side. And that's what happened. The voice to Parliament got shot down in pieces. The Prime Minister was essentially humiliated, but that wasn't good enough for the Labor Party and the Greens. Now at state and council levels, they're trying to sneak in and impose treaties, Indigenous treaties, in various jurisdictions. And one was at my local council a couple of months ago. We harmlessly opened up the ATSIC committee minutes, and nobody reads those minutes. And for some reason, before the council meeting, we decided to have a look at them. And it must have been fate or luck pushing us to have a look at them. And we discovered that the Australian and Torres Strait Islander Committee had, Aboriginal, sorry, and Torres Strait Islander Committee had essentially voted to enter us into a treaty agreement. And there was this whole document prepared, and all we had to do as councillors was vote it in. And it was going to be a signed treaty where we would acknowledge that the land was never ceded to us, and the Indigenous are the true owners of the land. We're going to commit to work targets, Indigenous employment targets, consultations on land that we want to buy to make sure it's not Indigenous claimed, or, you know, and all these percentages, targets we had to meet, dual naming of our new streets and suburbs or significant places with Indigenous names as well. It was, in my opinion, an absolutely horrendous proposal, and it's actually coming up again tonight because I had it deferred for legal advice, but it's now coming up again for debate tonight, and I'll be voting against it because our people voted no to a voice to Parliament, and we believe everybody's equal.
Unfortunately, the case of the progressive left is that if you vote the wrong way, then they'll just make you vote again and again and again until you vote the right way, the way they want you to vote. And it's completely denying the voice of the people, completely denying the will of the people. And we have similar issues here in New Zealand as well, along those lines. At least the audience, the listeners will be more than familiar with the things that are going on here. It's fascinating to hear that you're going through very similar problems over there across the ditch.
Well, we are going through very similar problems. And it's very ironic, as you said, you know, the left, they constantly preach tolerance, acceptance, democracy, but only when it suits them, only when you agree with them. If you have a difference of opinion, there's no tolerance or acceptance or democracy. No, they've got to ram through their ideologies and their wishes. And if they can't ram them through, you get labelled a racist, a bigot, and the rest of it.
Yeah, and everything is about equality, equality this and equality that. And then, but then when it comes to ethnic issues or racial issues, and suddenly they're more than happy to create a hierarchy and you know, basically say that yeah, people of certain ethnic groups and immigrants to the country shouldn't be equal to other groups of people in the country. And yeah, it's completely, I wouldn't say hypocritical. I don't want to complain about it just being hypocrisy. But yeah, it's unfortunate. It's a deliberate deception that they play on people.
Oh, look, absolutely it's a deliberate deception. And now they're, you know, even over here now, they're facing a drawback or a slap in the face over their own issues they've created. We have a lot of Palestinian protesters here. And for a long time, the Labor Party's gone out of their way to paint themselves as a friend of the Muslim people, and they support certain marginalised causes. But when push came to shove, they've been put in a very difficult situation here because, you know, now we have their own people that they supported putting a lot of pressure on them to do more over Palestine, and essentially, oh, no, now we have a problem. You know, these people are painted as troublemakers and whatnot. And it's funny how the problem that they created of their own making is now coming around to bite them in the behind, but they're labelling their own people troublemakers when it suits them.
Yes, that's right. They've encouraged these protests for overseas issues, for foreign issues in their own countries. In many cases, imported a lot of these grievances, and they pander to them. But of course, yeah, as soon as it comes to actually doing something, then suddenly they're worried about, I guess, international repercussions. They want to be aligned with American interests.
And it just shows and paints a picture of what absolute hypocrites they are, because they spent 20 to 30 years telling us that, you know, they support certain issues, they support marginalised issues and people they deem they have been hard done by. But whether you agree with it or not, when protesters get up or whether their own communities get up and say, well, we're not being supported by you because we feel you should be doing more on the Palestinian front, you know, they're hypocrites. Now, either way, I'm not advocating one way or the other, but what I'm saying is they are hypocrites because they now want to turn their backs and stand at an arm's distance from stuff they've encouraged the last three decades.
I've seen a lot of accusations as well for around local councils in Australia being pressured for land grabs, as they're called, and you mentioned that with the treaty that they're trying to get you to sign. What are the real risks to public land being taken away in these land grabs?
Well, it's unknown. You know, when I open up a document, which is a prepared treaty, and the agenda that night was horrendous. It was a massive agenda, and it was buried in the ATSIC committee minutes. And, you know, it's the unknown. When they're saying they want employment quotas, they want consultations on our land purchases, they want dual names, you know, none of this, the councillors weren't briefed or none of this was discussed or any legal advice given at the time. It's the unknown. What's next? What other claims are going to come? What other claims are going to come next? Aside from consultations on land and getting permission to purchase land, are council rates going to go up if there is, you know, if there is claims on land? I believe nearly half of Australia now has some kind of land claim on it. There was a significant land claim that was recently won this week in Queensland by an Indigenous group, and it's very worrying times, very worrying times. And people are afraid of the unknown and how it's going to affect their bottom dollar and their hip pocket.
And these purchases from the council then that you're talking about, is it that's not land that the council currently owns, or does this affect land that the council is just trying to acquire, or land that the council is trying to sell? Like, well, it's not no longer really your land anymore then, and you have to, the public doesn't own their own land anymore, and they have to consult with private parties in order to do something with it.
My understanding was, if the treaty was to be entered into under the format that was presented to us, that on any future land purchases, we had to consult with the relevant Indigenous body, land council body. And why do we need to consult as a council with an Indigenous body if we want to purchase a land? Like, you know, I'm going to call it out for what it is. Absolute rubbish. You know, you buy the land off an owner and that's it. There should not be any consultations. And, you know, I don't buy into the theory that Indigenous councils have claims and ownership on land. It just, you know...
This is on people's private land, basically. You don't really own your land anymore because you need someone else's permission to sell it or to buy it.
Well, that's the way I read it, you know. What's to say tomorrow they might say, oh, there's an Indigenous claim on your home or next door's home or down the street, and what issues? People are very afraid of this kind of stuff, and it's something we shouldn't be even experimenting with. The people voted no to the Voice to Parliament. Take it as a clear message. Stop trying to convolute things. People do not want these issues at their doorstep. They don't want to deal with it. They just want to be treated equally and live side by side with their Indigenous brothers and sisters as equals.
And now how important, I mean, we've basically sort of gone into this, I guess, but how important are local councils then on a lot of these cultural issues? Because local elections are often sort of downplayed, taken as not serious, have much lower turnout. Yeah. But it sounds like, as you're explaining here, you know, being a councillor at a local city council in Australia, that these are actually really important issues and people tend to not know enough or care enough about them.
Yeah, I'll explain it thoroughly. Around about 2015, 2016, local councils in New South Wales and Australia kind of changed forever. Gone are the days where old retired men and women sat on councils. There were small populations of 30, 40,000 people, 50,000 people. And, you know, it was a part-time job. In 2016, there was a formation of a handful of super councils, and Cumberland is one of them, where they are an amalgamation of various councils. We were amalgamated with the old Highwood Council, the old Auburn Council, and the Woodville Ward of the old Parramatta Council. That essentially gave us a population of 250,000 people. That is more than your state member or your federal member have representing them. So your average state member might have 70,000 people and your federal member will have 80 to 90,000 people. Councils now, they've got big budgets, super council like ours, roughly a $250 million budget annually. And they're big areas and you represent 250,000 people. So we are the front line of servicing people, your very grassroots. And you cannot underestimate or you cannot take for granted what your local elected representatives are doing, because it really does affect your way of life and what happens in your front door.
And we have local elections next year in New Zealand. That's something important for New Zealanders to consider as well, that we have in the past very much neglected local councils, and we see a lot of, as you've mentioned, nefarious cultural agendas that are being slipped through in New Zealand as well at the council level, and councillors that don't represent the people, don't represent the majority of their constituents. And it's something that the listeners should be very interested in getting more involved and clued up on what's going on at the local level. Thank you very much, Steve Christou, for coming on the show today and for giving us a bit of a summary as to what's going on in Australia. And it's, yeah, as I'll mention it again, very interesting to see that a lot of the issues that you're facing are very, very similar to the issues that we have in New Zealand.
Thank you so much for having us.
And to the listeners, we will be right back after this break. That was Councillor Steve Christou from Cumberland City Council in New South Wales.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to, dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.